fewer than 70% of retirement claims are processed in less than 2 months at the Office of Personnel Management. Estimating just what you'll get in retirement benefits can take a long time. Tammy Flanagan is Senior Benefits Director, the National Institute of Transition Planning, and writing about the 8 most common mistakes why your retirement estimate might not be what you thought. Now, Tammy, you did a double shot here. You actually have written about estimating retirement 2 weeks in a row. And so I want to hopefully connect both of these pieces together. The first one's how to estimate your retirement. And that's really a great instruction that I want to link at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so people can see the steps that you take. And then the piece that you've just come out with is really about what's happening now. Once people go through the process that you recommend in your previous column, why it might not be what they expected to get. You write about these 8 things. We don't have time for all 8, but I want to ask you about a couple of them. One of them is improper documentation, and you pose the question, when's the last time you looked at the EOPF, the employee? Tell me what that means.
Hey, hi, Francis. Thanks for having me. It stands for Electronic Official Personnel Folder. That used to be the old cardboard folders that had all your personnel records in them. Well, of course, they've now gone electronic. But when you look through your official personnel folder, you should be able to clearly see documentation of all the beginning and ending dates of any part of your federal career, along with what retirement coverage you had and what your work schedule was. And sometimes, believe it or not, some of these records could be missing. And if they are, it can cause great headaches in trying to verify the service to make you eligible to retire, let alone calculating the proper annuity benefits. So I think that employees sometimes don't realize that sometimes there can be discrepancies in your actual records versus what you actually did. So that's a good starting place.
I'm just guessing that the answer to the question that you pose, when's the last time you looked at yours, if we ask folks that you talk to at seminars, or we ask folks who are listening to this station right now, the answer more often than not would probably be never.
Yeah, you hear both sides of that coin. You will hear people who says, what is an official personnel folder? You know, they
right.
don't even know that somebody's keeping track of this for them. And then you have other people who got the word when they started that they should maintain their own personal personnel folder so that in case something does get missing, they can replace it. So yeah, I find in my travels both situations, and I really do like it when I find someone who has been keeping track of things themselves, so they're not really relying on the agency to have done it for them, and that's a good step towards getting an accurate retirement.
Another one of the most common causes of an inaccurate retirement estimate, you write, is sheer complexity, and I can understand that. There's a lot of paperwork and a lot of information flying around here.
That keeps me in business, doesn't it?
That's
true. Trying to explain all these rules.
That's right.
Yeah, so it is complex, I have to admit. I mean, over the years, civil service has been around since 1920, and I know this week we're celebrating Social Security's 80th birthday. Well, civil service is pushing 100 years coming up in just a few years. So all the rules that applied back then over the years have changed a little bit here, a little bit there. We've actually changed, of course, into a whole new retirement system, and even those rules are different from the old system. So trying to keep track of that and see what applies to you, when did you do it, how did you do it, that can really boggle your mind and make you go blurry-eyed, trying to figure out, do I have everything I need, does it all count, is there anything I have to do to get it to count? So it can get complicated, especially when you've had a varied career where you've worked at different agencies and you've had breaks in service and you went from full-time to part-time. All of those little things, all those changes can make it more complex.
I know this isn't a news flash, but sometimes people in government make mistakes. One of the common causes of an inaccurate retirement estimate that you write about is coverage errors, and you write, tens of thousands of federal employees have been classified under CSRS or FERS who should have been put in the other system or in CSRS offset. Mm-hmm. So that strikes me as one of the most important things that somebody should look at.
Yeah, and it's really not as easy as it sounds to determine if it's the correct classification or not. Now, for most employees, it's easy. If you were hired before 1984, you're CSRS. If you were hired after 1983, you're FERS. But for many thousands of employees, there's that gray area where you might have been hired in 83, but you weren't a permanent employee, or maybe you were hired under the D.C. government, and then you switched over to FERS later on. And it's those cases where the rules are a little bit more muddy. that it's very easy to make an error in coverage with these employees who come in after either a break in service or after that type of a change in their career. So for that certain pocket of people, it can be very complicated.
Tammy Flanagan of the National Institute of Transition Planning and writing in GovExec, 8 reasons your retirement estimate may be inaccurate. Another one of the reasons that you put in this piece is resignations and refunds. What kind of refund are you talking about there?
Well, whenever an employee resigns from federal service, their benefits, some of them they leave behind, some of them they take with them. Now, an example would be Social Security is one that you take with you because that follows you no matter where you work. But your thrift savings plan is one that you can either leave it in the thrift plan or you can take it out and move it with you to your new employer. But what I'm talking about here is neither one of those. It's the FERS or CSRS contributions that you pay into the retirement system while you work as a federal employee. And if you don't work long enough to retire, you have the option to withdraw that money and take a refund. And of course, if you later come back to federal service, you have the option where you can repay the money with some interest and recapture that service.
And that sounds like that fits right in with one we talked about earlier, the sheer complexity of it, just another element to be floating around here that could potentially impact the way that you either think about these things or actually get the right amount of benefit.
Right. And it's the funny thing is that none of this has to do with the calculation, the actual multiplying the numbers out. That's the easy part.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part's just making sure you have the service that you think you have that's going to count towards your retirement eligibility and calculation.
You write about military service credit issues, and you write active duty military service is potentially creditable towards CSRS and FERS retirement benefits. So that must mean there's a caveat there somewhere, Tammy.
There is. And I find this all the way up the ladder of grade level. I was doing a seminar today, as a matter of fact, that was all senior execs. And the one guy, you know, swore that he thought his military service was going to count because they changed his service computation date to credit it, which you would think that would be the case. However, they only changed the date to credit the combat time for leave accrual. When it comes to retirement credit, in order to get that same credit, number one, he would have to pay for it. Number two, he'd have to waive his military retired pay to be able to receive that credit. So it's an altogether different definition of what counts for retirement as opposed to what might count for other reasons, such as accruing leave or becoming eligible for a step increase, for example. Those are different rules.
Boy, I'm glad that we have you to explain all of this stuff, because this
I'm glad we have a lot of people like me in the government who understand this, because it is complicated. Boy, luckily, there are people who are experts.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here, man. Another one that you write about is divorce. You write, if you've been divorced, your agency's retirement specialist isn't equipped or authorized to compute the marital share of your retirement and survivor's annuity that might be payable to your former spouse. OPM has to do that.
Mm-hmm. And the problem is that OPM's not going to do that until after you retire.
Mm.
So if you're trying to plan your retirement, you're trying to figure out how much you actually get to keep versus what goes to your ex, it's very hard to determine that. So the best you can do is get a retirement estimate, take it to the lawyer who drafted that divorce decree, and hopefully they can sort of figure it out for you, because they should have someone there that can work it out.
Yeah, I understand that's not probably very desirable, but I get why that is. I imagine it's a legal issue that OPM doesn't want to be in the position of saying something's a certain number and having somebody misconceive that as being the actual definitive number when they won't really know it, I guess, until after the person actually leaves government service.
Yeah, they really are pretty careful about trying to make sure that that's kept in a special location. But on the other hand, how does one plan for their retirement if they don't really know what their retirement's going to look like? So it's a very vicious cycle of trying to get the correct information and accurate estimates. It can be frustrating at times.